Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Sunday's UFC Fight Night 81 event, which takes place in Boston, Massachusetts. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium package bets for UFC 195 went 2-2 to lose 1.11 units overall. We won our bets on Michinori Tanaka and Dustin Poirier, but lost our plays on Tony Sims and Carlos Condit. We also won our one-unit free bet parlay on the Dober-Holtzman over 2.5 rounds total, parlayed with Albert Tumenov. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 81 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on Fox Sports 1 and UFC Fight Pass this Sunday night. Let's dive right in. Now kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass is a light heavyweight contest between Francimar Barroso, who is 17-4, and Elvis Mutafsic, who is 15-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Mutafsic -165, the comeback on Barroso at +125. Right now, looking over at our sponsor, fivedimes.eu, it's Mutafsic -155, Barroso is +135. So nothing to report as far as significant action or line movement. There is a little bit of two-way action coming in on this fight, and I think it'll continue to go that way for a while. It is an intriguing matchup, no doubt about that. I mean, both these guys have a path to victory, really. Mutafsic is taking this fight on short notice. He usually fights at 185. He's taking this fight, obviously, at 205 to make his UFC debut. Outside of the UFC, he has a decent resume. I mean, he's a former MFC middleweight champion. That's a decent organization to win the middleweight strap at, for sure. He's also a world series of fighting veteran. So he's got a lot of experience in his pocket, and he's going to be ready for his UFC debut. I don't think he's going to be overwhelmed at all. And this is actually a pretty decent opponent for him to get, because he matches up fairly well with Barroso. I mean, Mutafsic is a well-rounded veteran. His striking is definitely his best attribute, but he does have a complete MMA game. But what I like about him the most is, I mean, his diverse striking attack. I mean, mixes things up really well with his hands and his feet. He has accuracy. He's got some speed to go along with it. He's got some knockout power. And he's got that killer instinct. Now, he does, if he wants, against most fighters, he has the capability of taking the fight to the ground. So I think he has that in his back pocket as well. So he's got that fight IQ to know, hey, I can get a takedown, maybe steal the round with some points, get on top, throw some ground and pound. Also, he's got a sneaky good sub game to go along with it. Now, against really good wrestlers, he can be controlled. He can be put on his back at times, and he can lose that way. But overall, he's a pretty hard guy to take down and control. I mean, once you get him down, it's kind of hard to keep him down. And I think outside of, again, very dominant wrestlers, a guy like Barroso is going to struggle in that department. So Barroso, you could say a lot of the same things. I mean, he's a very complete MMA fighter. He just doesn't really excel in any one particular area. He's not very flashy, not very fun to watch at times. I mean, he's the type of fighter. I mean, what we saw against Ryan Jimmo in his last fight, that's kind of what Barroso is. He's a very strong, physically gifted fighter in that aspect. He can control you, can push you up against the cage. He does throw with some power a little bit as well. He can kind of make the fight a little boring. Again, it's good wrestlers. Again, they can't put Barroso on his back. They can control him a little bit. So he has some of the same flaws that Mutafsic has, but I think that his main factor here would be the strength, would be that he's the more natural 205er here, and he might be able to kind of outmuscle Mutafsic and control him here. But if not, Mutafsic is going to be the better fighter. He's going to be able to land the cleaner punches here. I think he's going to be able to outpoint Barroso along the way. And I think overall his fight IQ and his activity level is a little bit more as well. So there's more things to like about Mutafsic, even though he is taking this fight on short notice as a late replacement. I think he's a better fighter here, so I'm going to lean his way. He is a slight favorite for a reason, and I think he deserves to be. And I think after this fight, win or lose, he'll probably drop down to his natural weight class of 185, and he's going to be a tough out. So he's going to start things off, in my opinion, with a win here over Barroso.
Yeah, make no mistake, this is probably Elvis Mutafsic's last fight at the 205-pound weight class. He's only taking this fight at light heavyweight because of the short notice and because it's an opportunity to fight in the UFC. That's something he's been campaigning for. He took a couple easy fights recently, especially his last one, just trying to stay busy and hope to get on the UFC's radar, and an opportunity came up and he snatched it. So good on him. Now, in terms of pure skills, Mutopsic has them in spades. He is definitely the superior striker against Barroso. He is the more powerful stand-up artist, much better technical boxing. He has just as good, if not better, leg kicks. I mean, you should really see his fight against Joseph Henley in MFC to see just the devastation he can apply with his kicks. And then he had a 5-round battle against Sam Alvey that he won pretty convincingly. So, you know, he's been in there against UFC caliber fighters, and he's performed admirably. Really, the only people that have given Mutopsic fits have been really strong wrestlers, like most recently the Jesse Taylor fight in World Series of Fighting. And Barroso isn't a strong wrestler, but he can, you know, grind the fight down into a standstill almost. You saw that in his last fight against Jimmo, where just he repeatedly pushed Jimmo into the fence and made it ugly and kept Jimmo pinned there and had that inside position. And it was not an entertaining fight at all. I had to watch it for preparation for this, and I did not enjoy it, but it was effective. And that's something he could do against Mutopsic here, because Mutopsic is going to be the smaller guy. Now, he's not going to be smaller in all the actual measurables. Mutopsic actually will have a reach advantage. He's going to have the longer legs as well for the kicks. But Barroso is a natural light heavyweight, so he should be the more physically imposing fighter, the stronger guy. So it would not surprise me to see him bully Mutopsic a little bit. Now, Mutopsic does have pretty good takedown defense. It's really only the elite type of wrestlers like a Jesse Taylor that were able to take him down and keep him down. And I don't think Barroso can do that consistently, but he could shove him into the fence. And that is the big concern here, because it's all about really whether or not Mutopsic is going to employ good footwork, not make any big mistakes, and not let Barroso close the distance. But for the most part, if Mutopsic can keep the spacing proper on the feet, I think he lights Barroso up. Barroso's an okay fighter standing, but with the way that he kind of charges in, he kind of bull rushes his opponent to try to close that distance and push him into the fence. If Mutopsic can just sidestep that and counter, then he's going to be in terrific shape. And I kind of see him pulling that off. So I'm on Mutopsic's side here, and I think that he not only wins, but I think he can win convincingly and make a very strong impact in his UFC debut. Now, dropping down to the bantamweight division, we have Rob Font, who is 11-1, taking on Joey Gomez, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things?
I opened Font -215, the comeback on Gomez at +165. Right now, looking over it five times, it is Font -230. The comeback on Gomez is +190. So a little bit more action coming in Font's way. Really not that surprised. I mean, Font's the type of guy, really, I mean, he's a prospect. He's got tons of power. He's had some hype coming into the UFC before his debut, and he made his debut against a very legit fighter in the division in George Roop, and he had a phenomenal win. I mean, a knockout win. We were actually fortunately to be on the dog price with Font in that spot. So I know what he's all about. I mean, he's a very capable fighter and probably under the radar still at 135, especially since he's been out for almost 2 years. I mean, his last fight was that debut win over George Roop. So he's had some injuries. He's had enough time off to recover though and get back in training, and he's going to be ready for this fight. Now, looking at Gomez before this matchup really was announced, I wasn't sure who Gomez was. So I thought, man, what a tough debut you're going to have against a guy like Font. But then digging into the research with Gomez, I was really impressed. And this is actually a tougher fight for Font than I think his original scheduled opponent was, which was Patrick Williams. So Gomez is taking a step in short notice for Patrick Williams here. And I think he's going to give Font a tougher fight, because what you get in Gomez is really, it's going to be a striker versus striker type of matchup. But Gomez is a very talented striker. Talk about a diverse striking attack. I mean, the guy is actually going to be about the same height, but he's going to have a couple inches of pure reach over Font. And he knows how to utilize that reach in most cases as well. He throws a nice lead jab and he mixes up his attack very well behind it. He's got a lot of power, like one of those guys that you watch and doesn't take much effort, but he drops people with his punches, and he's accurate with that striking as well. He has got good takedown defense. If he gets on top on the ground, he's got good ground and pound as well, and he utilizes elbows. I mean, he can cut you open with his elbows. He could be very effective in rocking you or you know, stopping you or finishing with his elbows as well. So he has a complete attack in his arsenal in the stand-up game, and that's what he likes to do best. Now, he does have some question marks about him. And one of those question marks is definitely his sub game, his ground game overall. And I think Font at this point, at this stage, they're very similar fighters, but I think Font is the more complete fighter. I think I trust Font's ability to wrestle a little bit more than I do Gomez, even though it's not going to be easy to take Gomez to the ground. I think Gomez has very decent takedown defense from what I gathered thus far, but I do think that Font is more capable in the submission aspect as well. And then both of these guys hit extremely hard. So what you're going to see here is a very fun fight. You're going to see, I mean, both of these guys really trying to knock each other's heads off, but in a very technical manner. In fact, these guys actually have trained with each other in the past, so they know what they're getting into. They're going to have that competitive respect for each other as well, because they know that, you know, one mistake could actually end the night for either guy here. So this is going to be a really fun fight for the fans, really, more than anything else, and a tough fight for a debuting Gomez, and also a tough challenge for a veteran now, I guess you could say, even though only after one fight in Font. So, tough one to pick, in my opinion. I mean, I'm all over the Font bandwagon as far as prospect goes, but I think this is a prospect versus prospect matchup that is a really tricky one to pick. I'm going to lean Font's way because I do think at this point of the game, he's a little bit more evolved than Gomez, but nothing would shock me as far as ending here goes. That's how much respect I do have for the newcomer Gomez as well. So I'm going to lean Font's way, but as far as the bet goes, you guys that are out there that are thinking that Font has an easy time here, just be careful, because I think Font is going to have his hands full with Gomez.
Both Rob Font and Joey Gomez are excellent strikers. The difference is Font is a little bit more diverse with his attack. Gomez, if you watch him compete, primarily he's just laying into people with some spectacular boxing. He has excellent footwork, great movement. He has huge power, and his hand speed is off the charts. He is definitely one of the best pure boxers already in the UFC, and he's just making his debut. It's that good. And he has a really good reach, so he can go out there and crack people and not get hit back. Now, Font, on the other hand, they're about the same age. Font's 28 and Gomez is 29. Font has a monster right hand as well. I mean, you saw that in his UFC debut, the way he put out George Roop in the first round. But he can also mix in leg kicks, and he does have a ground game. We haven't seen it yet in the UFC, but he is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu purple belt, and I think that that could be his biggest advantage in this fight is if it goes to the ground. We have not seen Gomez on the ground at all. He is really a complete question mark in that department. He has defended a couple takedowns. He's picked up a couple Travis Brown-esque elbows to the side of the head, TKO victories when people shoved him into the fence looking for takedowns. But I think if Rob Font can land something in the center of the cage and catch him swinging, he could put him on his back, and that could be a path to victory for him. Now, in terms of pure striking technique, Font probably will have the advantage from the very far distance because of his leg kicks. I think he really can pack a wallop with those. He can do some serious damage if he really is able to focus on those. But in the pocket, I favor Gomez. Gomez just has a little bit better hand speed. And one other thing you have to consider is the fact that Gomez is not a full-time fighter. He actually is a full-time diesel technician. So he's not able to constantly be in the gym and improving all the aspects of his game. Maybe that's why it's only really his pure boxing that is so good. He hasn't really had a chance to work on everything. But I will say that this is a tougher fight for Font than I think his original matchup against Patrick Williams. But I am going to very slightly favor Font. I think the odds are wonky in this fight a little bit. But I do favor Font to pull out the victory. But I do think it's going to be very close. And Gomez is a live dog. But my pick is going to be Rob Font. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Alir Latifi, who is 11-4 with one no contest, taking on Sean O'Connell, who is 16-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight? And how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Latifi -210, the comeback on O'Connell +160. Right now, looking over at Five Dimes, it is Latifi -270. The comeback on O'Connell is +230. So more love, more support coming in on Latifi. Not really that surprised. I mean, it's not like I think the hardcore fans and bettors out there just love going down and laying some cash on O'Connell there. But that being said, I think this is a very competitive matchup, and the line might be getting a little bit high. I know Latifi is a pretty good fighter. He's definitely a solid guy at 205. I mean, his resume overall is impressive. I mean, that Black Witch kick to the body loss. You know, he got kind of KO'd in that aspect of Black Witch. That doesn't look that great, but Black Witch is a pretty solid fighter, minus his recent loss as well overall. But yeah, I mean, Latifi's a type of guy that I think he's not going to make a title run anytime soon, but he's one of these gatekeeper type of guys that can actually pick off most people in the weight class and kind of keep people from reaching that top 10 grouping or top 15 type of grouping as well. So Latifi is a very solid fighter. He's got some power on the feet. He could definitely win by knockout. He's also got some good wrestling, good ground and pound, even has a sneaky good submission game. So he's very prepared. He's been training with Gustafsson and crew over in Sweden. So he's getting better fight by fight, getting more confidence. He knows he belongs in the UFC right now, and that could go a long way. Now, O'Connell, on the other hand, you could say a lot of the same things about him. I mean, O'Connell's actually been pretty impressive thus far in the UFC. I mean, even that fight, I mean, his debut loss to Jimmo was not. I mean, he got KO'd right away. He making things interesting at least early on before he got KO'd. And then after that, I mean, his effort against Vellante was definitely impressive. And then he rolled off two straight wins by TKO, which has been pretty impressive as well. So O'Connell's one of these guys I think that flies under the radar, and he does definitely have a complete game in his own right. He's got a little bit of wrestling. He's got some power on the feet, obviously. I mean, that's what he excels at the most, and that's what he likes to do. But he does at least have a capable submission game at times, or he's able to. I mean, training with Jeremy Horn and crew, you know he's going to be submission savvy, at least as far as defensively goes. I mean, he has been caught in a couple subs, but I think he's not that easy to control in a sub underground. His wrestling's not bad. So this should be an interesting fight, because I think both these guys kind of neutralize each other out. And what you have here is just Latifi, I think, being a step ahead of O'Connell almost in every aspect of the game. But O'Connell's going to make this a very competitive fight. And honestly, I mean, if you look at it, who do you trust more? I do trust Latifi just a tad bit more, but enough to lay the price that everybody else is laying out there, almost 3-1. I don't think so. This is tough. I think it's a dog or pass situation, but as far as a pure pick goes, I do expect Latifi to just kind of edge out a close decision fight here. If there's going to be a finish, I could see it go realistically either way. But again, I trust Latifi maybe just a little bit more in that aspect as well. So I think this is a tougher fight than most people do, obviously, and I think we're going to see a pretty competitive fight, but I lean a little bit more towards Latifi here.
The big difference between these guys is Latifi is just the more well-rounded fighter. O'Connell is dangerous in the pocket, but Latifi packs a lot of power too, so they're both very dangerous stand-up fighters. You've seen Latifi pick up some impressive wins on the feet in some of his more recent bouts, and O'Connell definitely has that ability to end a fight with his fists, but in terms of everything else, I just think Latifi has a couple surprising advantages here, like his strength. He is definitely one of the physically strongest fighters in the light heavyweight division. He can bully Sean O'Connell if he can press him into the fence or get a takedown, get top position. I expect Latifi to either pick up a TKO on the ground or a submission. Latifi is just that good in that department, and I think that that is by far his biggest advantage. Now, in a pure stand-up exchanges, O'Connell's definitely going to be looking to brawl, and I think that that would be to Latifi's detriment. And even though Latifi does pack a lot of power, and I do think that Latifi has a better overall chin than O'Connell. I mean, Latifi did go the distance against Gegard Mousasi, while really the only TKO loss of his career, at least in the UFC, was due to a body kick, and O'Connell has definitely been knocked out and hurt on the feet. So I think Latifi could win a stand-up fight against O'Connell, but why risk it when he has the advantage everywhere else? So I just think that this is definitely Latifi's fight to lose. O'Connell's an intelligent fighter. He is a very exciting and entertaining fighter, but I just think he's outmatched here overall. But he does have enough power that it could make a difference if he connects with something solid. But overall, I just think that this is Latifi's fight to lose, so I'm going to pick him. Now, moving on to the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, we have a lightweight battle between Paul Felder, who is 10-2, and Darren Cruikshank, who is 16-7 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Felder -230, the comeback on Cruikshank +170. Looking over $5 right now, it is actually Felder -265. The comeback on Cruikshank is +225. Interesting fight. I mean, Felder getting a little bit more respect. That's why the line got bet up slightly. This is a tough spot. I mean, in most cases, those of you guys have listened to the podcast for a while, you know, I sometimes tend to underestimate Cruikshank, which is not fair. I mean, he stepped up and he's proved me wrong on several occasions. but he is finally showing a little bit of, I don't know if you want to say decline or a little bit of what I thought he was, a little bit more vulnerable than most people think. Crookshank definitely has some skill on the feet. He actually has some pretty good wrestling to go along with it. So he's got a pretty well-rounded game. I mean, he's not going to go out there and really submit a lot of fighters. Obviously, that's one weakness of his game. But in this fight with Felder, that's really not something he needs to worry about. So this is a fight that he actually can be competitive with, and he could show Felder a different side or some problems that Felder might not be expecting in this spot as well, because he can mix things up well enough with this diverse striking attack. And Felder's basically going to want to stand and bang. That's what he does best. He's got a ton of power. He can be outstruck, though. If you look at Felder's fight, I mean, he's coming off back-to-back losses as well. I guess decent competition, obviously, but he has been hit. I mean, Felder has that aggressive style. He's got that push forward, I'm going to knock your head off type of style with decent technique to go along with it in most cases, but he can be hit and he can be outpointed, and that's been proven, obviously, in his UFC career thus far. So this is an interesting matchup because I do favor Felder. I think he's going to be a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger. I trust him more as far as, I think, overall heart goes. I mean, Crookshank, it has that little bit of quit in him. I hate to say it, but I think it's kind of true when he's facing these guys at times that have that make you kind of quit type of fighting aggressiveness or whatnot. He has folded in the past. I mean, he's either been knocked out or he's been submitted, or, you know, he's just kind of found a way to lose. And I think Felder kind of doesn't have that in him. Now, fight IQ on Felder's part is a little bit questionable at times as well. I mean, he needs to kind of step on the pedal and I think fight a little bit smarter at times, but I do trust him more in this spot. I think he will be able to keep the fight upright. I think Crookshank will try to mix in some takedowns along the way in this fight, but I think Felder will be able to stuff him and keep the fight upright. And I think he is the more capable fighter as far as landing that knockout punch. I think his chin is a little bit better. He has been rocked in spots for sure, but I do trust him a little bit more as far as getting knocked out. So I think that Felder, it's his fight really to win or lose. Now, as far as where the line is going at this point, it is, again, a little bit dangerous because I think that Crookshank could sneak up, and if it hits the scorecards, I mean, he could steal one here in this spot. I mean, Felder has proven, again, that he can get outpointed in certain matchups, and Crookshank, with his movement and his unorthodox striking style, could make life interesting even if he's not getting takedowns. So where the line at kind of makes things tough, but as far as pure pick goes, I mean, I do think Felder's power is going to come into play here. I think he's going to be landing the harder shots, and I think he's going to be able to possibly knock out Crookshank along the way, or if not, probably edge him out on the scorecard. So my pick is going to be Felder, but it's another case where you really have to be cautious betting this fight.
Paul Felder and Darren Crookshank actually have a bit similar striking styles, both with diverse striking offenses that have a lot of kick focus and some good punching power, both technical strikers, although Felder can get a little more wild at times and reckless, going for a lot more spinning attacks and things like that. But for the most part, these guys are very evenly matched on the feet. Crookshank, surprisingly, even has a little bit of reach, even though Felder's significantly taller. And the other big difference in this fight is chin strength. Felder, as you know, can take a beating if he needs to. I mean, he took some shots against Edson Barboza, and he just got a clinic put on against him against Ross Pearson. And Crookshank, on the other hand, if he got hit like that, he'd have been down for the count. I mean, he's definitely been hurt before in multiple fights. He's been dropped. He's been rocked. He got set up to get finished with getting eaten some big shots from Adriano Martins. Benil Dariush put him, did some work to him on the feet before finishing him on the ground. So Crookshank is definitely not invincible on the feet, but the big difference, again, is damage absorption. I think Felder, even though his defense is a little bit worse, I think he's faced a little bit better overall strikers. And Felder definitely can handle some of those big shots because his chin is significantly better. Now, one of the other big differences between these guys is the rest of their game. You know, Felder, pretty much, he's either going to be in open space trying to work you over with some impressive strikes, or maybe the clinch, but Crookshank can mix in takedowns. You saw that, in multiple fights of his, that he's able to shoot in, put people on their back if he really wants to. And he can do that against Paul Felder here. Felder's defense for takedowns is not amazing. He hasn't faced a lot of people that wanted to take him down. Danny Castillo was able to do it, but then Castillo screwed around a little bit too much on the feet and then ate a beautiful spinning back fist and got put out. So Crookshank will have to definitely have a diverse game where he mixes up his attack constantly to confuse Felder if he really wants to win. Because if this stays as a stand-up affair, I don't quite see Cruikshank being able to pick apart Felder the way that Ross Pearson did or Edson Barbosa, because he's not quite on that level. And he doesn't have the chin to hang with Felder either. So unless Darren Cruikshank really mixes things up, I see Paul Felder walking away with the decision or potentially a knockout. So I'm going to slightly side with Felder here. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 prelims, we have a featherweight contest between Maximo Blanco, who is 12-6-1 with one no contest, and Luke Sanders, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds makers' perspective on this one?
Up in Blanco, minus 160, the comeback on Sanders, plus 120. Right now, looking over the line of five dimes, it is Blanco minus 130. Sanders is plus 110. So line margins have tightened up a little bit, and a little bit of the early action coming in on Sanders, but there is two-way action on this fight as well, and I think it'll stay probably ballpark to about 130, 140-ish for Sanders, or for Blanco, I should say. We might see some late movement on Sanders as well. So this is going to be interesting to see where the line does close here, because Blanco obviously is the one that has been in the more public eye. He's been a UFC veteran now for a long time, and Sanders is obviously the newcomer stepping in again on short notice. He's stepping in for Bermudez, and he is the current RFA bantamweight champion. So outside of the UFC, Sanders actually has accomplished some decent things. I mean, he's faced some okay level competition. So he's going to be prepared to come into this fight and step up and face, and even on short notice, a guy like Blanco, especially because of the way his – basically the way he fights, the way his style is. Sanders is a very complete fighter. I mean, he's got good cardio. He's aggressive. Again, he's a well-rounded prospect. He pushes a very high pace. He's got decent wrestling, decent striking, has some good speed and power. I mean, there's a lot of good things to like about Sanders here in this fight. And his activity level, I think, is his best attribute overall. So he's not going to be the type of fighter that just goes out there and knocks somebody out with one punch, especially at the UFC level. But he is the type of fighter that can definitely have the speed and power to go along with it, that he mixes up a couple combinations. He can put people out. Blanco's a pretty tough guy, obviously a very hard guy to stop. He has wrestling. He's got a lot of power. Again, he's got the experience. He's fought in better competition overall. He's actually going to be a couple inches taller than Sanders, but the reach is going to be about the same. So I think out of the two, Blanco is definitely the more dangerous fighter. We all know what he's capable of. I mean, the guy is a finisher on the feet, no doubt about it. He's got that aggressiveness, that killer instinct. And again, in most cases, he's a very tough guy to control and put down. But the problem with Blanco at times is he does tend to slow down as the fight goes. And a guy that can push a very high pace like Sanders can give him problems. Now, one thing that bothers me a little bit is Sanders, again, another situation where he is stepping in and taking this fight on short notice. So he's stepping up a weight class. He should be fighting at 135, and he's facing Blanco here at 145. So that is a little bit of a concern, but that being said, I think that Sanders is actually not going to be too far outsized. Like I said, only 2 inch actual inch in height, and then they're going to pretty much have the same reach. And without a drastic weight cut, it actually could help Sanders in this short notice spot. So I'm expecting a very competitive fight. Obviously, most people are as well. If you're looking at the line, it's staying pretty steady, close to picking with a slight edge towards Blanco. I think that's about right, but I do like the fact that Sanders can kind of push that high pace, and he's more capable, I think, of using all aspects of MMA than Blanco has showed. And you also have to count the fact that Blanco does kind of have that wild, aggressive style at times, that he has been DQ'd and he does make mistakes. Fight IQ sometimes for Blanco is not the greatest. Now, he has been training with Jackson's, and I think he's improving in all aspects, including that type of stuff, but you just still have that little bit of concern as far as trust factor goes with Blanco. So with all that being said, I think it's a coin flip type of fight. I'm going to lean towards the debuter here and Sanders. I think that he's going to make a big splash at, you know, in his UFC debut, and then actually drop down to his proper weight class at 135 and actually make noise there as well, and make a run at some point to break into the top 10 and maybe even work his way up towards a title shot if he does keep on improving overall. So should be a good fight, a very tough fight. I don't think Blanco's getting any favors. I mean, he was supposed to fight a very game Bermudez here, and then Sanders, even though he is debuting, I mean, he's going to be a very tough matchup for him as well. So tough one, but I lean towards the dog a little bit in this spot, and I do think that Sanders might pull off a close competitive type of decision win here.
Believe it or not, I think Luke Sanders is a live dog as well. He is definitely, in my opinion, the most seasoned fighter making his debut on this card. He is coming in with that full entire skill set in mixed martial arts. And the only thing that he really doesn't have going for him in this fight is the fact that he's taken the fight on short notice and that he is undersized because he is a natural bantamweight. So, I mean, he's the type of fighter that I think that
can eventually become a top 15 level bantamweight once he does drop down and, you know, get a couple fights under his belt on the roster. Now, Maximo Blanco, that is a tough fight to make your debut against, but it's not one that he can't win. Blanco is a dangerous fighter. He has a lot of power. He's quick. He's athletic. And he does have a good natural wrestling base that could counter a lot of what Sanders wants to bring. But Blanco is the type of fighter that can make a ton of mistakes. I mean, we have seen it time and time again. This guy cannot get out of his own way at times in regards to weight cut issues, just fight IQ in general, getting himself disqualified, getting points deducted, you name it. Maximo Blanco has done it pretty much. So with the intangibles, you got to favor a little bit with Luke Sanders, even if Blanco has started training with Greg Jackson. Now, Sanders overall, I think in open space, Blanco should have the edge. He is the better overall boxer, and he does pack more power in his punches. Blanco does. But up close and personal, Sanders is nasty in the clinch. He throws brutal knees, both stepping in and if he's in the clinch. And when he gets to the ground, Sanders is smothering in top control, and he has some nasty elbows that he likes to throw. So, I mean, this is a guy that has that complete skill set, and he has some suffocating top control if he does get that top position. And I think the other thing that Sanders has that will be to his advantage in this fight is he is relentless with an incredibly high pace and a great motor. So he's the type of fighter that can push all three rounds really, really hard, and Blanco might not be able to keep up. So what I would do if I was Luke Sanders, even though he's taken the fight on short notice, and usually people have to pace themselves a little bit on those type of fights, is go out there, pedal to the metal, and try to make Blanco keep up with him. And maybe he loses that first round against Blanco, but I can see him winning the next two, maybe even getting a late finish, because this is the type of fighter that just goes and goes and goes, and he can just wear people down. And I think that Luke Sanders, as long as he can impose his will a little bit here and get this fight ugly and really make Blanco work, he's got a good chance of pulling this off. So I'm actually going to side with him. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Chris Wade, who is 10-1, taking on Mehdi Bagdad, who is 11-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Wade -290, the comeback on Bagdad +210, right now looking over five dimes. There is some action coming in on Wade. It is now -330, the comeback on Bagdad is +270. So a little bit more action on the favorite here, which stylistically, it's not really that much of a surprise, because what a big difference. I mean, going from Tyson off for Wade to Bagdad is definitely, I don't want to give Bagdad any disrespect, but it's definitely an easier fight for Wade. I mean, a stylistic fight that he should be able to get some takedowns, should be able to control the action of the fight, and he should be able to at least probably come out with a decision here, just the way they match up. Bagdad is a talented fighter. He is coming in again on short notice, stepping in for Tyson Muff, as I just mentioned. He is a former RFA lightweight champion, so he's got some skill. I mean, there's no question the guy is definitely talented on the feet. He's got some sneaky good power. He utilizes his clinch game really well. He throws nasty elbows, very accurate with those elbows. I'm really impressed with him, actually, how effective he can be. And he has basically a very technical skill set standing overall. I mean, good boxing, good kicks, good knees, again, good clinch game, just everything you want to see in a striker. My problem with him is at times he just isn't active enough, and he tends to let people kind of stay with him, even on the feet where he excels. And Wade is capable of actually striking with Bagdad. Now, I think Bagdad, the longer they strike, he's going to have the advantage for sure because of his technical skill set and how kind of diverse he is with his striking and how accurate he is with some of those unorthodox techniques. So Bagdad definitely has an edge standing. I think he has an edge in a clinch as well, but Wade is a more complete fighter. Wade is going to come into this fight looking to take the fight to the floor. If he's not able to do that, he's going to probably be able to push Bagdad up against the cage. He's got to be cautious there because, like I said, in the clinch, utilizing those elbows, Baghdad is going to be dangerous. But overall, I think Wade can at least outpoint him. He's going to be a little bit more busy throughout the fight as well. And I think there's a possibility that Wade gets it to the floor. He could actually take his back and win by submission, where we all know that he's got sneaky good chokes as well. So there's a lot of good things going for Wade in this fight compared to Taisimov. And I think he would have been actually competitive with Taisimov as well. So this probably is a good thing for Wade, and I do see him winning this fight. Again, stylistically, you have a guy that's more of a wrestler with a striking ability in Wade versus almost more of a pure striker in Baghdad. So I got to lean with Wade here because I do think he's going to probably outpoint Baghdad along the way.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say that Chris Wade is the more complete fighter here. It's just both fighters have their own skill sets that are almost complete opposites. Baghdad comes from a kickboxing background. He wants to keep this fight standing either in the clinch or in open space. And Baghdad definitely packs more power. He is the better overall striker. And in the clinch, he has some good elbows. So he's very dangerous when the fight's on the feet. But Chris Wade is one of the better wrestlers in the lightweight division. And time and time again, he has taken fighters down. He's worked for submissions and not been afraid to ride out decisions either. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen here against Baghdad. Baghdad has had issues in the past with fighters that took him down and kept him down. And I think Chris Wade definitely has the wrestling level to utilize his biggest strength and get this fight to the floor, keep Baghdad on his back, take away Baghdad's weapons on the feet, and then just ride this out. And maybe Baghdad gets worn down enough, especially replacing Taisimov on short notice, that Wade is able to pull off a submission late. So I just see Chris Wade dominating this fight, and Baghdad, to me, only really has a puncher's chance for the brief instances where this fight is standing, because I don't expect Chris Wade to hang around and screw around on the feet for long. So I think even though Baghdad is a decent fighter, he had a good appearance on The Ultimate Fighter Season 22, even beat Lobov, who ended up being one of the finalists, I just don't see him doing enough here, and I don't think that he can hang with the wrestlers in this division, and I wouldn't be surprised if they ended up matching him with a striker in his next fight, because he is exciting on the feet, but Chris Wade's wrestling is going to be way too much for him here, and I expect Wade to be in control for pretty much the entire majority of this fight. So my pick is going to be Chris Wade. Now moving all the way up to the light heavyweight division, we have Tim Boach, who is 18-9, taking on Ed Herman, who is 23-11 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Boach, minus 190, the comeback on Herman, plus 150. Looking over at the line right now, it is Boach, minus 240, the comeback on Herman is at plus 200. So more support coming in Boach's way. I kind of figured it would go that way. He just seems to be a little bit more respected by the overall betting community. I mean, he has been for a little while now. I mean, he was actually a solid favorite at one point over Dan Henderson as well. And he ended up, obviously didn't work out too good for him because he ended up getting knocked out in that fight. But still, I mean, that's the kind of respect that Boach gets. I mean, he has some competitive lines against very solid competition. Whereas Herman, he's always had, I think, overall respect from the MMA fans out there and bettors, but as of late, not as much. So, I mean, I'm not surprised at all with the action coming in Boach's way here. But the way they match up is definitely intriguing, and especially that it's going to be a 205. I mean, these guys are not fighting a middleweight. They are fighting a light heavyweight. So that kind of makes you scratch your head a little bit. I guess it's a good thing for both because they're not going to have to cut as much weight. They should be a little bit happier, a little bit fresher, a little bit healthier going into this fight. And I think it is an intriguing fight because both these guys are talented fighters. They both can knock you out on the feet. They both can wrestle. They both have decent takedown defense at times. I mean, depending on who they match up with, of course. So they both have a lot of similarities. I just think that, honestly, Herman is a little bit more well-rounded. He's a little bit more of the complete MMA fighter in this spot. I think he has got a better submission game. I think his stand-up is going to be a little bit better, a little bit more diverse. But Boach probably has, obviously, the more punching power to go along with it. And at this point, I mean, both of these guys have been knocked out a couple times in their careers. I always thought that Herman had a pretty solid chin. But then, obviously, in his last fight, it didn't work out so well for him. And I think that's probably one of the reasons he wants to kind of move up to 205 and not cut the weight a little bit against Derek Brunson. I mean, Brunson is not really known for his devastating knockout power, and he got caught. So I think this is kind of a fresh start for these guys, especially, like I said, for Herman in this spot. And I do like how he matches up with Boach because I think that Boach is going to kind of have a hard time with Herman, even on the feet. I mean, he's going to have to land that big shot to rock wobble or, you know, get rid of Herman. And I think it's going to not be that hard or difficult, because at times Herman's defense is what really frustrates you, because he does get hit. He does get rocked. And again, for the most part, it's been holding up okay, but at the same time, I'm just not sure. I mean, if Herman does not go down and Bosch isn't able to knock him out, I think Herman's going to outpoint Bosch, and I think Herman's actually going to be dangerous enough that at this point, I really don't trust Bosch that much either as far as chin goes. And he's always been known for his toughness. And again, he's kind of had a solid jaw, but coming off that devastating knockout loss to Henderson, he's not getting any younger either. So I think realistically, both these guys could finish each other in this spot. And I just think that Herman is a little bit more complete. If the fight goes to the floor, I think Herman's BJJ does give him a significant advantage. And then again, on the feet, I think he could be a little bit more active, a little bit busier. And I think he probably could outpoint Bosch, or who knows, probably catch him and knock him out along the way as well. And you cannot be very confident in either guy these days. So I think it is a dog or pass situation, in my opinion, here in this spot. And as far as a pick goes, I gotta have to lean towards Herman in this spot as well. I'm gonna go against the grain, and I think that Herman could pull off the upset here, and I think that we're gonna see him maybe start his career off on the right step at 205, and it'll be interesting to see how much left either one of these guys have in the tank and what they do from here. But I have to lean a little bit more towards Herman, honestly, across the board here.
Ed Herman, Tim Boach at 205 is definitely a little bit more of an interesting fight than it would have been at 185. And the interesting fact about this is that Ed Herman was the one that made the choice to move up to 205 permanently. And Boach is more taking this fight because he couldn't find anybody else to fight at 185. And he was like, well, I would have fought Ed Herman anyway at 185, so I'll just fight him at 205 if that's what he wants. So Herman is more making this a permanent move. He's already adjusting his body. He's packing on a little bit more muscle, and Boach is just doing it because, you know, he doesn't have to cut as much weight. So I think, at least in terms of how the fight being at light heavyweight will impact both fighters, it's going to be a little bit better for Ed Herman. Now, in terms of a skill set, these guys are pretty evenly matched. They're both about the same age. Herman does have a little bit of reach, but Boach, you know, can kick a little bit better. Herman is a little bit taller, but both guys have good power on the feet. In terms of defense, definitely Herman is the more hittable guy, and both guys have been put through the ringer. I mean, they have literally faced some just monsters in the middleweight division in their last few fights. I mean, you look at Ed Herman, he had to face guys like Jacare and Tim Boach. I mean, literally just nasty opponents, having to fight guys like the current champ, Luke Rockhold, along the way. I mean, basically, you look at the last 10 guys combined that they fought. I mean, it's scary. And but I think the issue with Tim Boach is he's pretty much lost almost all of those fights. Even the ones that he won, he had to make crazy comebacks in. And at least Ed Herman's been able to go out there and pick up a couple quality wins that he earned, like, you know, Rafael Natalia, some decent fighters in the middleweight division. And I think that if Ed Herman can build up a nice, comfortable lead, it's going to be tough for Tim Boach to come back against him. And Ed Herman is normally a very good chin, and I think that's something that scared him a little bit, was getting knocked out so quickly in his last fight. For the first time. So that's why he's moving up to the light heavyweight division. Tim Boach, on the other hand, normally has a good chin, and he got knocked out extremely quickly in his last fight. So both guys coming off of really poor performances, and there's a lot of question marks about both guys in terms of their durability, their age, everything. So in terms of their skill sets, I think maybe Boach's judo and wrestling is a little bit better. Maybe he'll be looking to get this fight to the ground a little bit more, but Herman does have a very underrated ground game. And in terms of pure boxing and striking, I think Herman is actually a little bit better with his boxing, but Boach does have better defense. And, you know, Boach does have some, a little bit more of a diverse attack. He will mix in some kicks. I mean, he was able to stifle Hector Lombard in a middleweight fight. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Boach win a stand-up fight either. I think these guys are very evenly matched, but I think part of me is leaning a little bit towards Ed Herman here, just because I think mainly because of the fight being at light heavyweight. And I think that he's going to be a little bit more prepared in that department. So I'm very, very slightly leaning Ed Herman, but there's not a ton of confidence to be had in both guys. But my pick is going to be Ed Herman. Now moving on to the main event of the prelims, we have a welterweight battle of veterans in Patrick Cote, who is 23-9, taking on Ben Saunders, who is 19-6-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Saunders, minus 155, the comeback on Cote at plus 115. And right now, looking over at the line, it is now Saunders minus 115 over five dimes, and the comeback is Cote minus 105. So basically a pick 'em with a slight lean towards Saunders. Tough one to predict here because, I mean, both these guys, again, are fan favorites for sure, depending on who they match up against. I mean, they do get some respect and some support from at the betting window in most cases. And I think it's a good matchup stylistically here, what you're going to get. I mean, you're going to see really what welterweight moves on and still kind of has relevancy in the UFC at the moment. I mean, Cote has looked better. For a while there, I honestly thought that Cote would probably lose a few fights in a row and maybe possibly get put out of the UFC. He looked like he was on a bit of a decline, but man, you got to give him a lot of credit. I mean, he's been putting in the work, and outside of that Thompson fight, I mean, he's looked great since losing to Kung Lee, and that was back in 2012. So I think he is getting better and better, and he's kind of reaching the peak of his career, even though he's 35 years old now. So have to give him a lot of respect for that. And I think he's going to bring it here against Saunders as well. I mean, Saunders is a very difficult guy to prepare for, though. I mean, he obviously has that long reach. He has a heck of a clinch game. He knows how to use that reach very well. He can be effective in his striking game, has some knockout power to go along with it. But the thing is with Saunders, even if you take him down, he's hard to deal with on the floor. He can submit you there. So anywhere the fight takes place, Saunders is very dangerous. The thing with Saunders is that you have to be cautious about if you're supporting Saunders is that chin. I mean, that chin, he's been knocked out three times. He's been wobbled more times than that as well. So that is definitely a concern. And Cote does have enough knockout power. Cote is going to put some pressure on Saunders along the way. And he could possibly catch that chin and put him out. If not, I think we're going to see a very competitive decision to go back and forth. And I think Saunders, we could say a lot of the same thing. I mean, Cote has been working on his wrestling. He's been working, obviously, on all parts of his game, and it has shown. But Saunders is going to be dangerous. And I think Cote, even though he's only been knocked out officially once in his career, he has been getting rocked along the way. And I think at age 35, his chin is not getting any better. So I wouldn't be surprised if Saunders actually catches Cote along the way and finishes him that way. And the problem with Cote here is he has been utilizing his wrestling a little bit more than he used to. And if he tries to take Saunders down, he's probably going to end up getting caught in a submission. If he doesn't, then he's just going to get kind of stifled. He's not going to be able to do much because Saunders is that good underground as well. So this fight has to remain standing for Cote to be effective. He's got to have to put some constant pressure on Saunders, and he's going to have to look for that knockout punch to win this fight. And I think Saunders honestly has a little bit more ways to win, because I think if it does hit the scorecards, I think Saunders will be competitive enough that he could steal a decision on the cards. I think Saunders could submit him, like I said, and I think Saunders could possibly knock him out. So another spot where really hard to trust both these guys, even though they've shown some signs of improvement recently. I don't like the fact that Cote is 35 years old, even though I'm saying that he has looked better recently. And then Saunders again. I mean, he's only 32 years old, but in MMA years, I think he's beyond that. He's been in some battles. So hard to trust really either one of these guys, but I honestly lean a little bit more towards Saunders in this spot. He has more ways to win the fight, so I'm going to lean his way.
I will agree that Saunders has more ways to win the fight in terms of ground game. Cote has been improving his wrestling lately, but that would be a disaster against Saunders because Saunders has an elite rubber guard jiu-jitsu game that is just stifling with his long length, and he can just absolutely maul people on the canvas now. And in the clinch, Saunders definitely has the edge there. I mean, his elbows and knees in the clinch are just devastating. And in open space, Saunders has a pretty good kicking game, but he's not the most powerful pure puncher. So in open space, that's where Patrick Cote is going to have his edge. And I think what he's going to need to do is kind of harness some of what Kenny Robertson did in the last fight against Saunders, at least in terms of his offensive striking. Robertson was very aggressive, basically just ducked his head down and put a lot of pressure on Saunders and just tried to hurt him badly on the feet over and over again. Because when even Robertson, who has a better ground game than Cote, when it went to the ground, it was Saunders' world. and Saunders was able to control things and put him in bad spots. So I really think Cote needs to avoid the ground at all costs and just try to keep this fight standing and force Saunders to slug it out a little bit in more of a brawl style, because that's where Cote shines. You saw that in his last fight against Josh Berkman, where it was just a complete war, just a slobber knocker where both guys were hammering the hell out of each other. And Cote ended up getting the upper hand in that one. And I think that he can win a fight if he forces Ben Saunders to fight like that. Because if he lets Ben Saunders impose his will and make this fight more of a clinch battle, make it a little uglier, or let Saunders get this fight to the canvas, then Patrick Cote is going to be in a lot of trouble. Now, in terms of durability, I think Cote is a little bit more capable of absorbing punishment than Saunders is, but Saunders also could put Cote out if he gets the fight where he wants it, which is in the clinch, because Saunders can punish you so badly with those knees and the elbows, and he can just slice you up, maybe even get a TKO doctor stoppage from a cut. And Cote, even though he's durable, he has started to get hurt a lot more recently. You saw it in his last fight. You saw it in multiple fights before his drop down to welterweight. He is starting to get rocked more and dropped more in fights. So that is a big cause for concern. But in terms of pure punching power and ability to finish a fight with knockout, it's definitely Cote's advantage there. And Saunders has been put out before in fights. You saw it against Douglas Lima, guys like that. So I do think that Cote, if he connects with something heavy, he can put Saunders' lights out for sure. Now, this is definitely a very evenly matched battle, in my opinion. And honestly, it's going to come down to who imposes their will. And I think Patrick Cote plays it smart and tries to get Ben Saunders to brawl with him. So I'm going to lean with Cote either picking up a decision or potentially scoring a knockout victory, even though Saunders does have a few more ways to win. So my pick is going to be officially Patrick Cote. Now, kicking off the main card, we have a lightweight contest between Ross Pearson, who is 20-9 with one no contest, and Francisco Trinaldo, who is 18-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Pearson, minus 170, the comeback on Trinaldo, plus 130. Looking over at the line right now, it's minus 150 for Pearson, and the comeback is still plus 130 for Trinaldo. So line margins have tightened up, and there is two-way action and support coming into this fight as well. I'm not surprised at all. I mean, this is another difficult fight. I mean, the matchmaking recently for the UFC has been tremendous because they're giving both fighters, obviously, and they're not kind of stacking the deck and getting people easy wins. And as evident on this card as well, I mean, there's some challenging matchups here. And this is another one. I think that Pearson Trinaldo is a heck of a matchup. Both of these guys are really in a good spot right now. I mean, they got momentum back on their side. I know that Pearson actually had a loss before his last fight. And then he rebounded nicely though against Felder and was able to surprise a lot of people, myself included, because I honestly don't trust Pearson's chin as much these days. That's why I really thought that Felder would probably maybe catch him along the way and knock him out. But that's the thing with Pearson, man. He's a savvy vet. He is one of the best strikers in the lightweight division. He's proven that time and time again. So depending on the stylistic matchup, Pearson actually does really well. He's not an easy guy to take down. I mean, Evan Dunham would beg to differ a little bit. But again, stylistically, depending on the matchup with him, Pearson can do well. He can usually outstrike his opponent. He can usually outpoint him. He's got good fight IQ. He's got pretty tight defense overall. Even though he's been knocked out a few times in his career, his defense isn't bad. So it's not like some of the guys that we were talking about, for example, Ed Herman earlier, that, you know, his defense is definitely lacking, and it's been for a long time throughout his career. So Pearson has a tight game. He's got a very respectable game. And I think he's the type of guy that, you know, shows up every fight. He's very intelligent about the way he prepares for a fight, film study, everything across the board. So there's lots to like about him. But Trinaldo, on the other hand, man, I've always been impressed with him. I mean, since the Ultimate Fighter show, if you look back at the footage, even beyond that, before that, his fights in Brazil, you could tell the guy has extreme talent, I mean, on his side, because he's capable of finishing people on the floor. He's capable of knocking them out as well. And since the Ultimate Fighter show, it took him a couple fights, but he's really actually finding his groove now. And his issues, in my opinion, the worst part of about Trinaldo was his cardio. I mean, he'd really go well in the first round, and then round two and round three, he was a different type of fighter. But I really think he's been putting in the work, and he's addressed some of those issues. His cardio is not nearly as bad as what it was after the Ultimate Fighter show. And like I said, early on in his UFC career, he doesn't slow down as much. He's able to kind of keep a better pace than he was. Now, of course, they all slow down. I mean, a 3-round fight is grueling. I mean, it's obviously easy for everybody to slow down a bit, but he's still what I'm trying to say with Renato is he's improved that cardio, that gas tank, which I think has hindered him in the past and has actually cost him some fights. So with the gas tank being better, with a little bit more confidence, I mean, he's got some quality wins on his resume recently. I mean, Park and Laprise, for example, the last two wins that he's got, I mean, those are very competitive guys that were up and comers, and a lot of people thought that they could go a long way, and Trinaldo just picked them off. He's 37 years old, and I think he is in the best spot of his career. So there's a lot to be said about Trinaldo. And again, I think he's actually the more well-rounded fighter. I mean, Pearson is great, but I don't think he's got the submission game. Obviously, Trinaldo does. And I think on the feet, Trinaldo has, I mean, Pearson has a ton of power, but I think Trinaldo has a ton of power, obviously, as well. So this is a challenging fight for both people. I think if Pearson does not get knocked out along the way, I think he can probably outpoint Trinaldo. He's got to be wary about those takedowns, though, because you know Trinaldo is going to try to take him down here and there. And he does have some decent underrated wrestling. So it is a possibility that he could get some takedowns. But overall, I think it does stay up. And I think if anything, I trust Trinaldo at this point a little bit more because, again, I think he has more ways to win this fight. I think he can wrestle a little bit, even if it's not very effective against Pearson's takedown defense. I think he could stand up and bang with him as well. And I think I do trust his chin a little bit more than Pearson's, even though he is older. He's a tough guy. He's been wobbled a little bit, but at the same time, he recovers relatively quickly. And it seems like once Pearson gets hit, I mean, especially with a killer like Trinaldo, I mean, he's got that killer instinct. He'll follow up and finish the job against a guy like Pearson. So I could see this fight again playing out either way. I'm going to have to lean a little bit more towards the dog here, though, because I do think Trinaldo has more ways to win. And at this point, I mean, it's hard to argue against what he's accomplished recently, and he's looking better. So not a confident pick by any means, because I know Pearson could come away with a win on the scorecards here, but I do think that Trinaldo probably pulls off the upset.
The thing that I like about Trinaldo here is that even though he is getting up there in age, he just refuses to deteriorate his skills. Like, you always expect a decline as fighters get older, but Trinaldo is getting better and better every time we've seen him. In his first few UFC fights, he was showcasing poor conditioning. He was slowing down badly in the second and third rounds, and that's just not happening anymore. He's getting stronger. His conditioning is getting better. His striking technique is improving. His power is very dangerous. You saw that in his last fight against Chad Laprise. Huge upset from Trinaldo. And at this point, you got to stop thinking that they're upsets because Trinaldo is just getting better and better. And I don't know when the decline's coming. Maybe it will someday, but I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. And Ross Pearson, on the other hand, had a great performance against Paul Felder, went in there and just outboxed him and kind of put on a striking clinic against him. And maybe Pearson will be able to do that here against Trinaldo, because I do think Pearson is slightly more technical with his boxing, but Trinaldo does have a more diverse skill set. He's got some excellent kicks that he can mix in with his boxing, and we've seen that those kicks do damage. I mean, he almost put away Piotr Hallman in the first round with a nasty body kick, and he could definitely do some damage to Pearson with a kick. And Trinaldo can mix in the ground game as well, so he is a little bit more well-rounded than Ross Pearson. So if he's able to utilize his full skill set, then he can win this fight. I mean, we saw what happened with a more well-rounded type of Evan Dunham, what he was able to do against Ross Pearson. He was just able to mix it up and confuse Pearson, and Pearson wasn't able to knock him out, and Pearson ended up losing. And I think that could happen here. Pearson is going to be a little bit more technical with his boxing, but Trinaldo can mix it up with kicks. Trinaldo can get those takedowns, and Trinaldo has a ton of power as well on the feet. So Pearson's going to have to be a little bit more cautious as well. Now, Trinaldo, he could go out there and just wipe the floor with Pearson, potentially, if he lands something heavy, because in terms of durability, Pearson has been hurt and knocked out multiple times in his UFC career. And Trinaldo really hasn't. He's very durable, especially, again, makes no sense because as fighters get older and they take more damage in fights, they get easier to get knocked out. And that's just not happening with Trinaldo. So I'm actually going to agree with Nick here. I think that Francisco Trinaldo has a really good shot of winning this fight either by decision or by knockout. And I think that he walks away with the W. So I'm siding with the upset Brazilian here. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Travis Brown, who is 17-3-1, taking on Matt Mitrione, who is 9-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, And how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Brown minus 190, the comeback on Mitrione plus 150, and right now it's sitting at Brown minus 150, Mitrione is plus 130. I am a little bit surprised because I just figured Brown would get slightly a little bit more respect than Mitrione at this point, but it's kind of what have you done for me lately? And honestly, Travis Brown has not looked like the same fighter that was actually on his way to a title shot potentially. I don't know what it is. I mean, obviously it's maybe the switching of training camps. It hasn't done him very well at all. He looks a lot more hittable. His chin has looked a lot more suspect along the way as well. It's just there's something going on with Travis Brown right now. I mean, people can say whatever they want. I know he's dating Ronda Rousey. He's got some personal – a lot of stuff going on. But whatever it is, it's definitely affecting his performance. Now, Mitrione, on the other hand, man, he's looked really good. I mean, it's a shame that Mitrione has those defensive flaws or those fight IQ moments like he did in his last fight against Rothwell. I mean, he was looking okay in that fight, and then he decided to take the fight to the floor and get submitted. That was a bonehead move, and that was a mistake that cost him the fight. But before that, I mean, he's getting better as far as his takedown defense goes. And then on the feet, he's one of the most dangerous heavyweights on the roster for sure. I mean, the guy has a tremendous amount of knockout power. He has confidence doing so. I mean, he knows that he's one of the most dangerous strikers in the division and he could KO most people and he's fighting that way. So I give a lot of respect to Mitrione, definitely. And I think honestly, if this fight stays standing, Mitrione's going to probably knock out Travis Brown. And I would love to just go crazy and you know, and bet the house on Mitrione in that spot. But the problem is here, and what we all have to consider, his flaw is on the ground. And Travis Brown, even though he hasn't been utilizing his ground game as much recently, he has a significant edge on the ground. So that's what's keeping me from really going crazy with the line on Mitrione. I know a lot of people are probably coming in on Mitrione because of that factor. They think he could probably keep it upright and knock out Brown. And I can see that happening, really. But part of me thinks that Brown, I mean, he should know that, right? I mean, all of us can assume that Brown knows that Mitrione is a very powerful striker and the most dangerous part of his game is on the feet. So why wouldn't you want to take Mitrione to the floor? Mitrione's takedown defense has improved quite a bit, like I said, but I think Brown is capable of probably getting this fight to the floor. And once it's on the floor, I mean, Brown has underrated jiu-jitsu, underrated ground and pound, underrated ground game across the board. He will have a significant advantage over Mitrione. I mean, if you compare, we can't do MMA math at all. It doesn't hardly ever work, but if you do compare, I mean, Brown finished Schaub on the ground where Mitrione got finished by Schaub on the ground as well. So Brown is that much better, I think, of a ground fighter than people realize. And MMA math here, if Brown does get it to the floor, probably should work. I mean, he should be able to find a sub against Mitrione here, if not get dominant position and just kind of beat him for mount until he gets a finish here as well. So that's what's keeping me from, like I said, going all in on Mitrione in this spot, because I think that, I mean, common sense says that Brown has a significant advantage on the ground. He needs to bounce back and win this fight drastically to save his UFC career, I think, for the most part. So I'm kind of leaning his way. Again, it's not confident, because if he does not fight smart and he decides to keep it standing and just kind of trade shots with Mitrione. Now, I mean, Brown is talented. He utilizes his kicks very well. He has some power in the feet too. He can knock out a lot of guys, but you don't want to get in that kind of fight, I think, here with Mitrione, because I think Brown is going to be the one that ultimately gets KO'd. So the smartest way to fight in this spot for Brown is getting the takedowns and finishing this on the floor. I think he knows it. Most of us know it. And now is it really, it's up to him. Is he going to utilize that game plan? I think you have to kind of give him the benefit of the doubt and think that he's going to do that. So that's why I'm leaning towards Brown. But again, not a confident pick because he could get knocked out.
Yeah, honestly, the biggest difference between these two fighters is the fact that Travis Brown has a decent offensive ground game while Matt Mitrione does not. In terms of the stand-up, both guys are extremely dangerous strikers. Both have a lot of power. And Travis Brown is a little bit more of a diverse striker, mixing in some kicks. He's a very athletic heavyweight. But with Matt Mitrione being a former, you know, NFL player and having that incredible athleticism of coming in from that level of professional athlete, I think Matt Mitrione should be able to get things going on the feet and outbox Travis Brown. He actually will probably be able to outmuscle him a little bit on the feet if he's able to avoid takedowns. Then I see Matt Mitrione getting the better of Travis Brown. Brown is just a little bit too focused on the offensive side of things on the feet, and it leaves him open to getting hammered in terms of his defense. Matt Mitrione actually gets hit about 20% or more less often than Travis Brown in terms of percentage of strikes absorbed. So I really think that if this fight stays standing, it's actually Matt Mitrione's fight to lose. Now, where this all changes is on the ground. You see Matt Mitrione, just about every one of his losses in his career, except for the one against Roy Nelson, everyone has been because of the ground. Chuck Congo took him down. You had Brendan Schaub submit him, and you had Ben Rothwell submit him. So even though Travis Brown isn't typically known for having, for using his offensive ground game, we have seen it in action, and it is pretty good. He did a great job against Chad Griggs, just getting a takedown, moving into an arm triangle, and just dominating him on the canvas and getting a submission. And then you saw it against Brendan Schaub, as Nick mentioned, somebody that was able to dominate Matt Mitrione on the ground. And Travis Brown was able to stifle Schaub's ground game and then get top position and then just batter him. So if Travis Brown uses his full arsenal of MMA skills and gets this fight to the floor, then I don't see how Travis Brown can lose. But if it stays standing, and maybe if he's getting overconfident again in on the feet after, you know, the work with the Glendale Fight Club and just wanting to stand and bang with people, then Travis Brown could get himself in trouble. So I don't fully trust Travis Brown here, but I do think that he has the skill set to win. So I'm going to pick Travis Brown, but I'm not crazy confident about it. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a lightweight contest between former UFC lightweight champ Anthony Pettis, who is 18-3, and former two-time Bellator lightweight champ Eddie Alvarez, who is 26-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Pettis, minus 290. The comeback on Alvarez was plus 210. Right now, looking over five dimes. It has been got bet up. It's right now minus 345. The comeback on Alvarez is plus 285. So Pettis, about a 3.5-1 favorite, looking across the dime best screen. It's anywhere from 310, actually, to 345, 350-ish out there. So slightly over 3-1 for Pettis. And the line, honestly, might be a tad high. But at the same time, stylistically, again, how these guys match up, it should be a pretty good battle. And I think that Alvarez is coming into this fight with a bit of momentum. I mean, I'll tell you what, I was really impressed what he was able to do against Gilbert Melendez. I mean, that eye in the first round, it was closing shut. I mean, it was a very difficult thing to overcome, and he was able to win the next two rounds and against a very game and talented fighter like Gilbert Melendez. So that has to boost his confidence that much more. Even in his UFC debut against Cerrone, that was a fairly competitive fight as well. So Alvarez in the UFC thus far hasn't looked bad at all. I mean, he's really coming into his own, and it's a shame that he really joined the UFC roster this late, because I think honestly Bellator probably took, you know, his best years from him, and he was competing there as they're obviously he was their lightweight champion, deservingly so, for a while. And he's just a very talented fighter. He's got really good boxing, he's got knockout power, he's a very intelligent fighter, he's got great fight IQ, he's got wrestling to take the fight to the floor. He's just a well-rounded MMA fighter that honestly at one time or another could have been wearing that UFC gold. I'm not sure at this stage if he still has it in him to actually get the strap, but he is fighting a former champion. So this is going to toss a lot here. I mean, Pettis, what can I say? I'm stunned still by the way he got dominated by Dos Anjos in his last performance. I mean, it's been since March of 2015. So he's had some decent amount of time off here to recover from all that. I know that, you know, mentally, physically, he needed some time off to kind of get himself back in order, because I mean that was a devastating loss. I mean, RDA beat him in all aspects of the game. So right now, mentally, there's got to be some question marks. I mean, in Pettis' own mind here, I mean, because Alvarez really presents a lot of the same problems that RDA presented in that fight. But still, I think stylistically, this is a pretty good fight for Pettis, because if any concerns with Alvarez along the years, it's been that chin. Now, again, he's the type of fighter, though, that has been rocked, has been clipped, and more times than not, if the referee allows him time, he recovers fairly quickly, and he's still game and is still able to fight and fight effectively. But against a guy like Pettis, he does have killer instinct. I mean, he could beat you with all sorts of different striking angles and just, I mean, the way he goes about it, his unorthodox but technical striking game, I mean, he's just smooth with his kicking game. I mean, his hands are Dynamite as well. So everything that Pettis throws, he can finish you with. I mean, he goes to the body relatively well as well, everything. So, and overall, he does have pretty decent takedown defense. So I think Alvarez is going to kind of struggle taking Pettis to the floor. And if he does get Pettis to the floor, let's not forget what kind of guard game, he has. He was able to submit Ben Henderson, which again is very impressive. And not just that, he followed that Ben Henderson submission win, which a lot of people think might have been kind of flukish, by submitting Gilbert Melendez, which at that point was never done. I mean, it's still, that was his only sub loss of Melendez's career. So Pettis has sneaky good submissions. He's got very good technique on the ground, obviously, as well. And then standing up, you can say the same thing about him. So Pettis is a very complete fighter. I just think, obviously, in his last fight against Dos Anjos, he was just outclassed there. He wasn't prepared, or maybe he took Dos Anjos a little bit too lightly, and it got him beaten. I mean, he got dominated in that fight. So interesting fight here, because, I mean, we're going to really see what Pettis is made of, bouncing back and fighting another worthy or challenging opponent here in Alvarez. And let's see if he gets back to that top spot, because for a while there, it looked like Pettis was going to be king of the lightweight division for a long time. I mean, how could you beat the guy? If you take him down, he submits you. If you stand with him on the feet, he's going to beat you on the feet as well. So I think a little bit of that mystique kind of went out the window in that loss, like I said, against RDA, but he still has that ability. So I think that this fight probably does end up playing out more so on the feet, and that should give Pettis the advantage, because I think I trust his chin a little bit more. He definitely showed some toughness, at least in the RDA fight. He has a very solid chin, so I do trust that aspect of it. And I think if anybody gets knocked out, it's probably Pettis knocking out Alvarez along the way. So I think that's the way it plays out. If it goes to the ground, I mean, I think Alvarez can control a little bit, but he's going to have to be careful, because Pettis might sub him on the ground as well. So I think Pettis does have more ways to win. I think he can win a decision here. I think he can win by stoppage, either on the ground or on the feet. So I got to lean his way. Now, as far as line goes, though, I mean, seriously, out there again, I mean, I've said it time and time again on different fights, but be cautious, because I think 3.5 to 1 at this point, especially off that head scratcher of a loss that he's coming off to RDA, we have to wait and see how he performs and how he bounces back against a very solid opponent. So I don't think 3.5 to 1 is honestly justified out there. I think it should be a little bit closer. So it's another dog or pass situation, in my opinion, but I do have to pick Pettis, because I do think he has more ways to win. And this is a big fight for him to kind of bounce back and prove that he's still one of the best, if not the best, lightweight in the world.
This could absolutely be a trap fight for Anthony Pettis. I know that he wants to get a win here and then immediately get right back in the mix as the number one contender to get his title back. But Eddie Alvarez is no joke. As you saw in his last fight, even if he's down, he's not out. Even his fight against Donald Cerrone, I mean, he won the first round and then Cerrone was able to come out and win the next two. But and the exact same opposite happened the last time around. Gilbert Melendez looked very strong early against Alvarez. He busted up his face. Alvarez's eye was swollen shut, and Alvarez just dug deep, got takedowns, outworked Gilbert Melendez over the last two rounds, and was able to pick up a surprise comeback decision. And he has the skill set that could give Anthony Pettis trouble. Now, the obvious thing that Alvarez does not have going for him is the fact that he gets hurt in just about every one of his fights, and Anthony Pettis is one of the most precision-based snipers on the feet, just absolutely lethal with his legs, with his hands, anywhere, you name it. So Alvarez is going to have to be very careful with his boxing defense, but in terms of his offense, he actually does have a lot of threats here that can give Anthony Pettis trouble. Now, Pettis has had issues against fighters that put a lot of pressure on him, that are constantly forcing him on the defensive, backing him up. And I think Alvarez can definitely do that with a pressure boxing attack. And Pettis has been taken down and ground out a little bit by some superior wrestlers with really good submission defense. You saw that with Dos Anjos in his last fight, where Dos Anjos was battering him on the feet and then just taking him down after he got him against the fence. Pettis' footwork was non-existent in that fight. And if that is the case again this time around, then Alvarez could have an opening. And you also saw that in Pettis' UFC debut against Clay Guida, where he just got taken down repeatedly and ground out on the ground. So I do see a path to victory for Eddie Alvarez with his takedowns, with his wrestling, and with his constant forward pressure on the feet. But the thing that scares me, of course, is the fact that Alvarez gets hurt. Alvarez can get dropped pretty easily, and Pettis is an extremely accomplished striker. And Also, Pettis does have that elite ground game, and he has been able to submit people that have never been submitted before. So, you know, just because Eddie Alvarez is very tough to finish on the ground doesn't mean that Pettis can't do it, because I don't think Benson Henderson or Gilbert Melendez had ever been submitted before, and Pettis was able to do that. Now, in terms of what Pettis has going for him here, I mean, he is should be extremely motivated after losing his belt. I would think that he has worked on his footwork, because he cannot afford to get backed into the fence repeatedly like he did in the Dos Anjos fight. I mean, that was a nightmare mistake that just kept happening over and over again. I mean, people that were betting on Pettis had to just be screaming at the TV, like, stop backing into the fence. Stop letting him pressure you like that. Circle away. So if Pettis is able to circle away from Alvarez's pressure, then I can see him landing good counters. I think he's going to do some damage with his boxing. I can definitely see his kicks doing some serious punishment, both to the body, to the legs, maybe even landing a head kick and putting Alvarez out. Because even though Alvarez gets hurt and comes back in just about every one of his fights, I mean, at some point when you face people dangerous enough, they're going to land something hard enough that you won't be able to come back. And Pettis definitely has that ability. So I think this is a dangerous fight for Pettis. I think the line is off right now. It's way too heavily in favor of Pettis, but I am still going to pick Anthony Pettis. I just think it should be a little bit closer odds. And don't count Eddie Alvarez out, because he does have the skills to maybe shock the world a little bit. But my overall pick is still going to be Anthony Pettis. Now, moving on to the main event of the evening, we have a UFC bantamweight title bout between champion TJ Dillashaw, who is 13-2, and former champ Dominick Cruz, who is 20-1. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Dillashaw minus 150, the comeback on Cruz plus 120. And right now, looking over at Five Dimes, is Dillashaw minus 140, the comeback on Cruz is plus 120. Now, there is heavy two-way action coming in on both these guys. Of course, they both deserve it. I mean, there's going to be strong support for both fighters, because they're just two of the best bantamweights in the world. Now, Dillashaw, of course, the current bantamweight champion, and what a run he's really been on. I mean, a lot of people thought Brow was kind of like the Jose Aldo of the division. I mean, a dominant champion that wouldn't lose his strap for a long, long time. And it was looking like that. I mean, Brow's a very talented fighter. Dillashaw dethroned him, not just once, but he ended up beating him again and knocking him out, finishing Brow twice. That's the kind of improvement he's made since the Ultimate Fighter show. I think you could see the progress slowly coming, even in his loss against the Sansao back in 2013. That was a competitive, really competitive fight that could realistically on the judges' scorecards could have went either way. So that, you know, you can kind of count it as different judges sitting in there. He probably remains, you know, undefeated since that Dotson fight. So I really believe that Dillashaw has improved to the point where, I mean, he is the best bantamweight in the world right now. Now, Cruz, unfortunately for him, he never got his title taken away from him, or he never lost his title, I should say, in an actual fight. I mean, he just got stripped of the title because of his injuries. And that is one thing that you have to consider here. Cruz is a fantastic fighter. He's proven it time and time again. But the problem is those injuries have taken a toll on him. I mean, he's only fought one time in the last 4 years or so. So that one fight, though, was really a great performance. I mean, because he fought and beat and destroyed, I should say, a very game Mizugaki. And I was surprised how easy he was able to kind of dispose of him there. But that being said, right after that, he gets hurt again. So the question marks surround Cruz. He's a very intelligent fighter. He's a very gifted, talented fighter. I mean, on the feet, his movement, of course, the way he goes about his striking game is a work of art, really. I mean, he's very intelligent. He's got wrestling to go along with it. Even though he doesn't utilize the sub game a lot, he even has some subs to go along with it. So he's a very complete fighter, and he was a dominant champion for a reason. I mean, the guy has tremendous skill. And then, of course, I mean, you could just tell by his commentating duties. He's just intelligent. He has all angles of the sport covered. He studies the sport inside and out. And he's game. I mean, he knows he's going to be, I think, more prepared in this fight than anybody possibly could be against Dillashaw. But is that going to be enough? I have my doubts, because these guys stylistically, they match up really well. I mean, that you could say they're kind of mirror images of each other. But I do think the difference here is Dillashaw has a little bit more punching power than Cruz does. I think Dillashaw could be the more effective striker along the way. And if there's going to be a stoppage in this fight, I don't really think it's going to be Cruz finishing Dillashaw. I think it's possibly Dillashaw finishing Cruz along the way. And if it hits the scorecards, I think that you got to give the slight right edge to Dillashaw as well. So I am leaning Dillashaw in this fight. I just think right now he is the man, and I'm uncomfortable with the amount of time that Cruz has really in the octagon recently, and facing a guy that just seems to be getting better fight by fight in a guy like Dillashaw. It's probably not a good situation for him. So I hope we see a very entertaining 5-round war, because that's what all of us want to see. And that's kind of what we're all expecting, because you do have two of the best bantamweights in the world going out of here. But I do have to lean towards Dillashaw. I think he gets the job done here.
Now, if these two had actually fought when they were supposed to fight, right after Dominic Cruz's impressive return bout against Mitigaki, then I actually would have favored Dominic Cruz, because he looked so good in that fight and shook off all the rust and was able to put away an opponent quickly. And his defense looked just as good as ever. Didn't really even get touched by Mitsugaki. But again, he had to go and get a serious injury and another knee surgery. And in the meantime, TJ Dillashaw has looked better than ever. I mean, he put on a clinic in the rematch against Hayden Barão and absolutely crushed him, humiliated Barão over 4 rounds before getting the early 4th round stoppage. And I just think TJ Dillashaw at this point has possibly surpassed Dominic Cruz. And it's sad to say, because I think Dominic Cruz is one of the greatest fighters in bantamweight history. Maybe still the greatest fighter in bantamweight history. But TJ Dillashaw at this point, in terms of athleticism, power, you name it, I think that he might just be a little bit better than Dominic Cruz. Now, in terms of how these guys match up skill for skill, Dominic Cruz is all about crazy movement, constant angles, shifting his positions, shifting his fight stances, and attacking you in different areas and moving out in different directions. His defense is actually a little bit better than TJ Dillashaw's, although Dillashaw's is getting better. And improving every time we see it. So Cruz is able to do all kinds of really wonky things in there, and it makes him very difficult to prepare for. So TJ Dillashaw, on the other hand, he uses a similar blueprint to Cruz, but something that he does is he usually is able to use that type of game plan against people that are on the offensive against him, and he's able to land really good counters and just hurt people that are the ones moving forward against him. And it's going to be interesting to see how Dillashaw is able to fight against somebody that's going to be using a very similar type of blueprint against him that he's been using against everyone else. Now, really, the big thing that Dominic Cruz has going against him is the fact that he has had now 3 major serious knee injuries. He's had a terrible groin tear that actually was what cost him his title. And he is just possibly the most injury-prone fighter in UFC history. I mean, he puts the recent run from Khabib Nurmagomedov to shame. He also has had repeated hand injuries. He breaks his hands in just about every fight that he's had, especially ones that aren't quick, and that's pretty much all of them except the last one. So I think, you know, Cruz could just break his hands early in this fight, even if he does get off to a good start. Now, in terms of intelligence and fight IQ, I mean, Dominic Cruz is possibly the smartest fighter in the entire UFC roster in terms of knowledge of the sport. I'm just a little bit worried that a little bit too much time has passed and he's not going to be able to physically do the things that are going on in his brain. So that is the big concern. And I mean, hell, I think Dominic Cruz in his prime probably could even potentially beat the TJ Dillashaw that is here right today, but he's not in his prime right now. He's in his 30s now. He's coming off of all those injuries, and he does not possess the finishing ability that Dillashaw has. So I think it's going to be very difficult for Cruz to get things going here. He's going to have to win a pretty one-sided decision, I think, if he's going to get his title back, and I think this is going to be very difficult for him. To me, TJ Dillashaw is just the younger, more explosive, more powerful version of Dominic Cruz. And he has made such incredible leaps and bounds with his work with Dwayne Ludwig. Every time we see him, Dillashaw looks better and better. And I think that he has reached that level that I don't see Dominic Cruz being able to surpass him. So as much as I love Dominic Cruz and think that he is one of the best fighters in the world, I just think TJ Dillashaw is just a little bit better than him right now. So I see TJ Dillashaw winning just about all aspects of this fight. And I see Dillashaw walking away with either a decision or potentially even a knockout victory. So my pick is going to be TJ Dillashaw. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 81. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Saturday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker Premium member. If you'd like to become a Premium member, just go to MMAOddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage for either Nick's or Mike James's Premium bets. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.